This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
It's 12 a.m. on a cursed YouTube channel, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, and welcome to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am joined on the other line by
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch. And later in the show, we will be joined by our special guest, Sam Rakalif. He is the managing editor of Defector and was the former managing editor of Deadspin. We will be talking about all sorts of stuff, not limited to, but including international chihuahuas. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Do you want to take a night call real quick?
Let's do it.
Hello, Night Call. My name is Carlos. I am from the Bay Area in California, sitting here as the world burns all around me. I am calling because I listened to your Monday podcast. What is this? Monday, August 24th. And I heard you ask us to call in about ghosts and the supernatural. And I figured, okay, this is my chance, because it relates to my mother, who I can only go so far as to call, I guess, a good witch and a channeler. I grew up very, very traditional conservative Mexican household, very, very Catholic. Grew up going to church, you know, was an altar boy, blah, 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 blah. And I renounced the church sometime around my early teens. But growing up, I can only describe my religious upbringing as traditional and also cultish. Yeah, so my mother, growing up, we would go to this spiritual medium in Salinas every week, where we would go, and then she would go into a trance and connect to the spirit world and talk to our friends about their relatives that are gone or their ancestors that they wanted to hear from. And this was just normal for me. We would take cleansing trips to rivers near Salinas, I believe, where people would connect to the spirit world, and then they would be washed of their sins. And you would think that that it would, it's hard to describe because it wasn't a traumatic cult experience. It was almost a boring and off and sometimes pleasant cult experience because they didn't force us to participate in rituals other than we're going to cleanse you and we're going to go swim in the river, because the adults would have their big spiritual connection and the kids would just kind of be upriver just playing with each other, which I think is unique because most people talk about their cult experiences as being horrible and awful. And I actually came out as queer when I was a teenager, and believe it or not, my mother was very accepting, and to her she said, oh yes, I talked to the spirit world, because, and they told me that you would have an amazing balance of feminine and masculine energies and to accept me. So thanks to the spirit realm, my mother learned to love folks that across the LGBT spectrum and continues to be one of my best friends to this day.
Thank you so much, Carlos, for this call. First of all, I love that the spirit world are allies. I think we all know this instinctively, but good on them. I would say, like, you know, I know that you described it as cultish, but I think that, like, when you talk about the kind of qualifiers for what a cult is, and I think that, you know, we'll be talking about the vow a little more later on, and I think that this comes into that, like, the idea of, like, a high control environment, I think, is really paramount to something being a cult or not. Like, and I think that our theology buddy, John, also called in at one point to just talk about the difference between, like, cult-like beliefs, like what we think of as being kind of fringy, versus the actual way that the group works. And the way that the group works is more, I think, makes a cult. So I would say you weren't in a cult. You were just in, like, a really chill, you know, strain of Catholicism. Because I was looking up, like, I was like, is this, like, how, you know, commonplace is this? Like, where does this kind of medium aspect of Catholicism come in? And, like, all I would run across were, like, the Catholicism.com sites that are just like, mediums are bad. You can't consult a medium. It's all evil. You're going to go to hell if you do this, which is what I, you know, what you would think of as being the standard response to that kind of thing. But also, Catholicism is kind of like the most magical of all the Christianities. So I don't know.
My parents left, were Irish Catholic, and most of my extended family is Irish Catholic. My parents were raised very religious, and my aunt stayed in the church, and she was a really big fan of psychics, which you would think she would not have been, but she was extremely really, really believed in psychics. I think when my mom was pregnant, my aunt bought her a reading that turned out to be, like, very true. And on my dad's side, there's a lot of superstition. They were very, very superstitious Catholics. So that's where you kind of, like, I mean, they wouldn't have seen a psychic or a medium, but my dad, like, you know, his knuckles are raw from knocking on wood sometimes. There's a lot of that, a lot of, like, the salt over your shoulder kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of what makes Catholicism charming, I think.
Yeah. At times. Like, you know, just the, like, literally believing that the wine is the blood and the bread is the body, like, which is, you know, seems like just semantics, but then it actually ends up kind of really reforming how those, like, different denominations of Christianity work. And yeah, like, it's so weird too, like, you know, being taught as a kid, if you grow up in Christianity or any kind of religion that believes in an afterlife, that, like, the people that you love are, like, looking down on you. Like, that's so close to just being like, yeah, they're straight up ghosts, and, like, you can commune with the spirit world if you want to. But, like, that is a big no-no. Like, you're not supposed to believe that. So it's very, you know, I can see, as, like, you know, there could be some gray area there to take advantage of.
Yeah, I wanted to say I think Catholicism has the most fun stuff of the Christianities. Definitely. Mexican Catholicism especially has just, like, a lot of beautiful stuff about it. And I feel like we've argued about this on the pod before, where you guys were sort of more like, people should make the religions more inclusive rather than always leaving the religions. And I think this definitely speaks to that, that to have a type of Catholicism that is inclusive and welcoming of queer people and, you know, hopefully pro-choice and stuff like that. There's a lot of valuable stuff about having a community of people that take care of each other that doesn't always necessarily make it a cult.
Yeah.
We're pro-groups.
Community does not equal cult. Yeah. No, it sounds nice. I mean, I think that that's something that, yeah, this is what we were talking about before. Like, that's a thing that a lot of people are missing now. It's just like, yeah, going out to the river with your a bunch of families and hanging out and, like, you know, hanging out with the other kids and stuff. Like, that. That's something that I think is missing a lot in a lot of cultures right now. But, yeah.
I saw a church marquee yesterday that I liked that just said, like, God doesn't social distance.
Where are they going with that one?
Yeah, I know. That could go in a bad direction.
Right. I thought about it a lot. But they were like, God doesn't social distance. Like, connect with him on our website.
And then you can have the power of God's immunity. Yeah, I would be interested in what our theology friend John would have to say about this. Or, yeah. But it sounds nice. I liked this call a lot. Thank you for calling, Carlos.
Yeah, thank you, Carlos.
Guys, speaking of cults, have you guys caught up with The Vow?
Whew.
Oh, yeah.
I got to both of them since we last spoke. I hadn't watched either. And so now I'm all caught up. I wish that there was more. I wish I could binge mode on this, but I do kind of like having going on this journey with it, pacing myself out.
I keep wanting to watch more. It's so good. We talked a little bit last week about how I felt like in the first episode, it was really marketed to me joining this cult. In the second episode, that went away. but also, Molly tweeted the question, who does Keith Raniere look like? And I have now devoted, I'm not proud to say, roughly 6 hours to trying to find the answer to this question.
Oh, okay. Give us some candidates.
Okay. John Besh, Chef John Besh from New Orleans. John Ritter also.
Oh, yeah. There's a little John Ritter.
There's a little John Ritter. But it's like, it's hard because nothing's getting close enough. One of the answers on Molly's thread on Twitter was Jared Leto on hamburgers, like fat Jared Leto.
Like Jared Leto in the movie about the guy who killed John Lennon. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was sort of babyish. It turns out with Jared Leto gains weight, he looks like more of a little baby.
He does. But,
my main candidate was David Foster Wallace.
Yeah, that's the one that I think of
It's
the
also
most.
Just because of the ponytail and the headband and stuff. But that
facially,
led me...
It's different.
That led me to Netflix displayed a display image, probably because it knew I was thinking about this all the time, of John Cusack and being John Malkovich.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe also the ponytail doing a lot of work there, but...
Well, also the bandana situation is sort of David Foster Wallace-y too. Like Keith Raniere in volleyball mode is very David Foster Wallace.
Yes, 100%. Like,
when he's got his hair down, then, you know, I can see some of these other candidates in there.
Keith Raniere is a shape-shifting face. Like, one picture of Keith Raniere might look like John Ritter, and another looks nothing like John Ritter at all.
He's got short man energy, though. He's short, right?
He's
like,
short.
Mark is tall, and he's short.
Yep.
You know what I really turned on him, I have to say? This is so specific, but this is like one of the first times I was like, honestly, like, ugh, okay, I'm out. Is in the second episode, Mark is working on a movie with Keith that's basically about their relationship with the Keith stand-in being the sort of wise man who helps the Mark character, you know, find his way through life. But they like drew character designs for each of them and like this kind of cutie anime style, like in a very like kind of, I don't know, comics artist on Patreon type style. And it grossed me out so badly. I cannot tell you why. It made my stomach just absolutely turn. Like the cutie Keith Raniere avatar was awful to me, more awful than any footage of actual Keith Raniere.
I totally agree. It had a WikiHow also there was like a little of the WikiHow illustration to it.
Yeah.
Of just but knowing what they were doing and like what Keith Raniere was kind of up to, I was like, ew, your self-image is gross that you think of yourself this way.
Somebody pointed out that the movie Camp Nowhere has both Allison Mack and fellow cult leader Andrew Keegan in it.
Oh,
right.
Made me want to revisit Camp Nowhere, which I haven't seen since it came out. But Allison Mack is a fascinating figure in this movie. She is sort of the Ghislaine to Keith Raniere's Epstein. She recruits other people in.
There's not a lot of her, though, because, and I think that's because she's not one of our narrators. Like, it's kind of amazing to see this through Mark's eyes, because I think that a lot of the stuff that's been reported out about this before has been about, like, the women who were a part of this inner circle that they're just getting to at the end of the second episode. That's, like, the main thing that made headlines and is the reason why there was a lawsuit and everything. But, I think we'll probably get more into Allison Mack as we go deeper into that aspect of it. I think it's super interesting. I have to say, I appreciate a male's point of view. But I do appreciate Mark's point of view on this, because it's like he's in this position of like, nah, he's just my buddy. Like, I'm friends with the smartest person in the world. And having to come to terms with the fact that like there are these women who are being put in danger when you are another guy and like, you know, disposed to believe and side with your powerful male friend. That's a really kind of interesting story that's being told. And I also, you know what I want to watch? We can watch Camp Nowhere. I want to watch What the Bleep Do We Now? I've never watched it before. And it was so everywhere. It was like the posters for it were like at every Santa Monica supermarket in like 2005. Like I think it's like an overlooked bit of culture that we should revisit.
For sure.
I think it was such a canary in the coal mine for the rise of conspiracy culture and the rise of sort of woo-woo. Like everything you think you know is wrong, and actually machine elves control everything in the world.
Yeah, I feel like everybody who is mega into What the Bleep Do We Know back then is now an anti-vaxxer mom in the Palisades. Like that, there's a direct line. That's like a...
Well, the way they use language, too, the way they invent new words for things and specific terms that are just used within Nexium, but so much of the stuff they use is also just like self-help and therapy speak. That's in so much other self-help and therapy internet. I had a fun experience this week. I have a tweet about the moon that always goes viral when there's a full moon now, about how it's hard to take a picture of the full moon. Mm-hmm. And I love it because it goes viral with like new age people every time there's a full moon now. So somebody who reposted it, I was looking at their account and a bunch of their posts were about limiting beliefs. And
interesting.
Yeah, but like not in a Nexium way, just in a like, hey, what do you think about yourself that you'd like to change? Like, what are the things you think you can't do? Which is what we all agreed sort of was like a good hook to get people into a group.
Definitely. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to take a The Vow Adjacent Night email.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique two-in-one product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com. Where America goes to hire.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Night Call. We got an email from a listener, an anonymous listener, that I thought was super interesting and was about another kind of NXIVM-esque organization that I'd never heard of before. Tess, what do you want to read it?
May I please? I'm a longtime listener, first time night emailer from Seattle, and it's about noon 30 here. I just listened to your most recent episode mentioning the Vow HBO docuseries. I had the same initial reaction as Tess. I feel like I would have totally joined. Second episode, maybe not so much. It was spooky to hear in the first episode that Seattle was one of the initial center locations. The initial NXIVM content also reminded me of this manifesting program I had subscribed to and since fallen off working on, called To Be Magnetic, TBM, and then a link to tobemagnetic.com. The ethos on inner child and integration / self-limiting beliefs is very similar. TBM also has a term called DI, deep imagining exercises, which makes me think of the NXIVM EMs. TBM / manifestation in general seems to be a popular thing, especially in LA. I'm wondering, what's your take on subscription-based self-work / programming, or even To Be Magnetic specifically? Is the industry around self-work just gross and preying on people that lack self-esteem? Isn't that everything, though?
I had never heard of To Be Magnetic, but then looking around the website that the listener sent us, I was just like, oh, this is just, I mean, it felt so normal. I was just like, this is just every girl in LA, basically, you know,
yeah.
Like every kind of woo-woo adjacent jewelry selling, you know, a crystal workshop doing lady in LA. Like, it felt very normal to me. But then when you start to get into the subscription aspect of it, not that it's even that expensive. It's like $324 for a year, which, like, I don't know, compared to the to Jordan Peterson's daughter's meet self-help group is a steal.
Oh, we got a very angry message about posting the Jordan Peterson and Michaela Peterson meet book that apparently it's not a real book, and that was a parody cover.
Oh man.
It was a parody cover.
We okay. got fooled.
We All got right. fooled.
I was trying to find out if it was or not. It was very unclear. The internet surrounding Jordan Peterson is not...
Somebody was like, great fact-checking night call, so... Sorry, guys. We apologize for falling for an insane grifter fake book cover.
Everything else was so crazy.
Everything else is normal in that story, though, right? Like, the book cover is, like, the one thing that makes it crazy. Is that that where I have that right? Okay.
Anyway. Well, To Be Magnetic describes itself on its website as the number one destination for grounded manifestation. Quote, a combination of neuroscience and psychology teachings with a little spirituality sprinkled on top. 90% of our members manifested when they did the work weekly. Are you ready to get out of your own way and manifest the life of your dreams?
When they use the word manifest like that, it just sounds like not to be gross, but like taking a shit. Like it sounds like
manifest. I mean, I don't want to knock anybody who's found this to be useful if they have, but I do think it definitely reminds me of in LA the life coaching and also acting classes are exactly this. Get out of your own way. You're the only one standing in your own way. We'll help you get out of your own way, which is so strange, especially when you tie it into like neuroscience. I'm not sure how neuroscience factors into this. Psychology, I guess I could understand, but the idea of getting out of your own way by handing over a lot of your decision making to a like guru type of person, a little tricky.
Well, there's also just, I think, the fundamental problem I have with a lot of these sorts of self-help, the mentality of it. The idea of getting out of your own way because that's the only thing that's holding you back, like, puts the onus on the individual as opposed to, like, our fucked up capitalist society. Like, if you're not manifesting, so to speak, right now, that it's all on you, that you're blocked in some way. I mean, that can be true to a degree. Like, you can be in your own way. You can have bad habits and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's totally legit. But, like... if you take somebody who's really struggling right now, say in this particular time when, you know, everybody's unemployed and it's impossible to like get certain careers off the ground because certain industries have ground to a halt, i.e. acting, not that that's like necessarily the target demo, but I feel like it is.
It feels like it is.
Then it's like, that's not all on you. And it's a very actually... to get back to the Christian values type thing we were talking about, it's very like self-punishing in a very puritanical Calvinist way where it's like you just haven't done the work that you need to do in order to have whatever success that you want. And that kind of thinking is very easy to fall into because that's the way that we're all raised. That's our literal culture, is that you're not working hard enough. So that's why you haven't succeeded. So I get a little bit annoyed when I see this sort of philosophy espoused.
Yeah, for sure. And it's that kind of law of attraction stuff that is total bullshit, but also is in The Secret and other snake oil stuff like that. The idea that if you just want something bad enough, it'll happen if you charge your crystals in the right way and, you know, do some manifestating.
Yeah, and the fact that you're like going to take this like, you know, like a sprinkling of spirituality or like, you know, in the stuff that's more straight up a spiritual practice and use it, you know, I mean, I feel like half the people coming to this are like, I want to like be an entrepreneur or something. There just feels like something, there's like a total disconnect there between like, you know, an actual spiritual practice that makes you feel like a more fully realized human being and like making money. Like, I don't know. It this feels so like Instagram, like sponsored ad type aesthetic. Not that there's anything wrong with that. There's plenty of Instagram sponsored ads I would like to sponsor us. but, you know, it just has that vibe. It has this really, you know, the design is all perfect. It's like very much like an affluent, aspirational kind of aesthetic that's meant to communicate material success. And yeah, kind of squicks me out.
Yeah, well, because it's preying on people's insecurities. It's not like appealing to people's sense of self-improvement. It's like there's something wrong with you. Only we can fix it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know. It's hard because I remember reading one of the Val Kilmer profiles that came out pretty recently, like within the last year, and how he was talking about how like cancer wasn't, like he didn't have cancer. He had like the, I forget the exact phrase, but it was something like I was like confronted by. It was, I don't have cancer, but like cancer's somehow attracted into my realm. And like with things like that, it's hard because to me they seem a little out there. But at the same time, I'm like, if you feel better thinking that way, you were very sick. Like you should think that way, you know, do you. But then when you see how some of these websites are packaged, and especially in the context of watching The Vow and seeing how something that did start out, even though I don't believe it ever had anyone's best intentions at heart, but it started out seemingly pretty innocuous. And then by episode two, we already see that there's like a splinter group forming of these women who are doing things that are drastically different than were presented in the first episode. And it's kind of, when you look at this website for to be magnetic, you kind of can see that like the way that this is being packaged is already like inherently, as Emily said, like geared towards more of a like a material success or a kind of like tongue in cheek. If you've run out of things to buy, you buy the like program that tells you that you're better than you were before you had it.
Yeah. You subscribe to positive thinking.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about Nexium that is coming across now in the second episode is like, if it weren't for the sex cult inside of it, it would just be like a multi-level marketing scheme. That's right. Sort of new age, and it might just still exist today.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of fascinating thing about it is like that, yeah, there it would just be kind of a, you know, maybe a little bit fringy, maybe a little a bit of a waste of money type thing. Like, I do still think that like whatever, like what we know of Keith Raniere's technologies are like, a lot of it seems kind of legit to me, honest, but to be honest, but like, yeah, but the fact that then there is, you know, whatever, 1 in 20 people who are attracted to that kind of thing also have a real propensity for like self-negation already and are willing and like almost wanting to get into this sort of thing where somebody else is dictating what their life is. Like, I think that is like, that's like a, and people are always going to be there to take advantage of that. Like, if you're a person who wants direction.
Right. And that's why people fall victim to dictators also,
yeah,
obviously,
totally.
And fascism. Like, a lot of people do want to be told what to do. And it makes sense why, because the world is fucking scary and confusing. And people just want, like, mommy and daddy to step in and be like, here's what you do. And that can be very easily used to manipulate and exploit people. Which is why you shouldn't trust anybody that's trying to position themselves as like a parental figure usually.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, once somebody's like telling you to call them master and it's not in a fun, kinky way, maybe that's a red flag. Maybe, you know, personal fascism is not cool just the way that geopolitical fascism isn't either.
Well, also going back to like our first call that we took today from Carlos, I think what seems apparent is that our understanding of cults has come a really long way in the past few decades. And I think that certainly like at one point a cult, like if you had an experience where it was like a lot of people going and like, you know, contacting dead ancestors and like engaging in baptism rituals and stuff like that, that those things seem like out, if they're outside of your experience, it would seem easy to classify those as like a fringe group of a religion. And like, maybe that seems like a cult to you. But then looking into the kind of like newer weird self-improvement systems like Nexium and things of that ilk, you see that the real difference is if the leader is a person who is like Keith Raniere kind of prescribing something that's so, I mean, one of the things that struck me about the second episode was Bonnie, who is Mark's wife, was writing
Aunt
down
Beru in episode 3 or 2, I can't remember, of Star Wars.
Yep, and they sure showed that clip. I was like, I knew it. But she wrote down her schedule. And the people who were successful within this organization were being sleep deprived. They were being so overworked, just to break them down. And so, but then you see the potential for that in other more innocuous seeming self-help groups, where if you subscribe to something and you're investing money in self-improvement, you're investing in this kind of like projected image of the really healthy looking lady in the sun hat who's like taking care of herself, then there is a sense of like, you don't want the failure of not working hard enough to achieve something. If it were easy to achieve, you would have already achieved it without help. So now that you're committing to this, it seems like there's the potential to drive someone to a point where you are breaking down the things that kind of hold the individual together in order to control them.
Yeah.
Right. And like the technology, a lot of it just seems kind of taken from talk therapy. And so it feels similar to Scientology in that way of being like, don't get therapy. Therapy is bad. We've got this thing that's just like therapy and that will have some of the benefits of therapy, but also we're going to like take advantage of how vulnerable we're making you feel.
Yeah. Well, I'm all in. I'm excited for the next episode. How many episodes are there of this?
I think there's like nine.
Nine? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're gonna keep checking back in with it. Let us know your thoughts about the vow and Nexium and all that stuff. Give us a night call, 1-240-46-NIGHT, or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about that or anything else in the world. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, our guest, Samer, is going to join us, and we're going to talk about those chihuahuas. So stay tuned.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome back to Night Call. We are now joined by our guest, Samer Caliph. Samer Caliph has written for Slate, New Republic, and Popula. He was previously a managing editor at Deadspin, and he is now a managing editor at Defector, which is a brand new site, which is either launching now or very soon at defector.com. It's a worker-owned sports blog and media company that is, very exciting. So, hi. Welcome, Samer.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We have a lot we want to talk about. We got a question that actually talks about a subject that we talk about a lot, which is sort of like lost versions of the internet. We had a question about just like what were the sites that we were escaping to now, like the idea of going to websites, and it's kind of like it feels a little bit antiquated now with social media and like Twitter just being the place where everybody who cares about reading stuff online is going. But I know you guys are kind of seeking to rethink that a little bit with Defector. What's your feeling on that, like about the website hangout and like the future of websites?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like social media kind of consolidated a lot of it and just weeded out a lot of the smaller places where people would go to just find communities. I mean, and also there are probably other factors too, just in terms of how people react on the internet these days. But I think Defector is trying to just create, like, we want to break news and we want to do reporting and we want to write stuff that people want to read, but also there is a sense that we do want to create like a nice community that people want to be a part of, and hopefully like doesn't need to be moderated too well because people kind of grasp the expectations going in. So I mean, in terms of other sites that I go to for an escape, I play a lot of like online chess. I like find like NES emulator sites. And
you said that online chess was like taking over and becoming dangerous chess.
Yeah. I mean,
do you have money wrapped up in it?
No. Thing is, I would be like Howard Ratner right now if I was betting on chess games with myself. Like, I would be deep in the hole and like getting chased by bookies. But, I picked it up because I used to play when I was younger. I was never like any good or like ranked or anything. I would just play with my dad and like friends and stuff. And it seemed like a good hobby that would keep my brain like active. But in the end, it actually is just like making me extremely frustrated all the time. Like I understand how people, like I've never been like a really big golf person, but I understand why people get so addicted and pissed off by the game and like keep coming back to it.
I've been playing a lot of online Boggle and having a similar Boggle's really my speed. Nice. But I play on wordtwist.org, and there's this user, I think her name's like Mama of Four Boys or something. And I'll think like that was like a pretty good game of Boggle right there, Tess. And then I'll look and it'll say the average score and then the high score, and the average score is all like, I think I've only beaten the average score once, and it probably was because like not that many people had played that board. But Mom of Four Boys is like consistently like doubling and tripling my score. And I'm working like so hard. But it reminds me, it's that kind of like compulsive, like when you're sick of the scroll, you then do the like, you know, refreshing the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not as good. I mean, just the
Do the Boggle games get heated, or are they pretty?
There's no, but you're playing. It's just you're playing on a board by yourself, and then they're comparing your score to other people's scores, which is why I like it. I used to play online Scrabble a lot, but then EA like changed it, and now it's unplayable. So that was my solution to like scratch that itch. But it's just, and the games are so short; they're 2 minutes, so you just like play one, and then you're just like go, which is terrible.
I used to do so many online games, like Yahoo Games used to be like a major thing. They had like the that word scramble game where you find the different words within it's very Boggle adjacent. I can't remember the name of it anymore. But then I feel like all kind of low stakes online gameplay, like word games and that kind of stuff, a lot of it moved to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was so weird when Facebook got into like hosting games. It just felt like a con to get you to be like logging more hours on Facebook, even if you're just like tending to your Farmville farm or something. So I haven't really like, you know, and now I'm thinking back with great fondness and nostalgia about like hanging out on Yahoo Games, games.yahoo.com, when I was a work study employee at my film school.
Well, if you want to play the Boggle, it's called Word Twist, but it's hosted by something called Puzzle Baron.
Ah, yes. I'd love to be on the property of a baron when I'm
Puzzle
playing.
Puzzle baron.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, and we get a little bit inside baseball on media sometimes here, but and sometimes on other forums, like we had a live stream where we suddenly just became a media chat. So for people who maybe don't know, can you kind of explain the writer owned or the worker owned model for Defector and what that means and why that's important and different from how the majority of blogs and media outlets work?
Sure. So everybody except for one person at Defector was part of Deadspin, and we all left under, I mean, I don't want to go into the circumstances too much because I feel like they're already public anyway, but
sure.
We left under circumstances that were caused by bad experiences with the owners. So
yeah.
What we're doing with Defector is it's worker owned in that everybody has a piece of equity. Everybody gets to vote on major decisions. So we still have like an editor in chief, and we have somebody, Jasper Wang, who's in charge of like the business side of the site. But all the workers are able to hold them accountable with a vote if it comes to that. So we're putting like safeguards in place so that there's nobody in any position of power who can just unilaterally make decisions, basically.
Yeah. Which feels like the most, I don't know, like logical way for a site like that to be run. But I think like, maybe a lot of people got a crash course in like how most media companies actually work from that episode of Succession, where it's just like this really oftentimes labyrinthine thing that, you know, billionaires decide to get a stake in who don't really care about the future of the site and the people who work for it. And it's just kind of a mess. Yeah. And I think like when you think of a publication that a group of people are working on together, like that feels like a much more kind of organic, holistic way for it to be run, but it's unfortunately not very common now.
I was interested because Deadspin Up All Night, I know you did a bit of that, Samer, and that kind of to me was like, it's one of those nostalgic kind of things of like the late night blog as opposed to the late night Twitter. I'm maybe too old to really enjoy Twitter. Is my reasoning for why I don't, because I just like, I feel as though whenever I use Twitter like late at night and everyone's like enjoying the late night Twitter vibe, I'm like, I really liked this on blogs. And I don't know why it was such a novelty to be like, it's night, but we're writing online. Like we're all here at night. We're all up. But it made me think of, you know, when we got this inquiry from a listener about like what kind of sites do you go to escape the hell that we live in? I was like, well, Deadspin was one for sure. And it's, you know, now Deadspin exists, but Defector is really Deadspin.
Right.
Like you guys are kind of carrying on. Yeah. But it's just like, it is hard to find what used to be kind of like the soul of the internet. And I think like what Emily said too, is that a lot of that is because we've kind of seen how like companies can mismanage sites that do have really great communities built in, make it so hard for people to put out the content that they're really like excited to put out. And it just becomes like this bureaucratic mess. So I think it's exciting that you guys are doing this, but I'm also like, I wish everything were sped up and that there were more sites like popping up. Like, I mean, hopefully it'll set the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question is, are you guys going to stick to sports?
We will not be sticking to sports.
Hell yeah.
There's some ideas. I mean, we've just been tossing around ideas for either recurring features or just one-off things. And we're definitely open to doing whatever. And we're also doing stuff on, we're trying out like a Twitch stream, which we never really even thought about like at the old place. But I think that'll offer our ability to like go outside of just like talking about last night's game or whatever for an hour.
From my limited experience with Twitch, which is mostly with Night Call live streams, that does feel like the most logical kind of analog between something like, you know, the kind of like hanging out on a blog or hanging out in the comment section of something, just because it is like it's contained. You can actually see a list of who's there. Like I stumbled across when I was on a deep dive, this like anarchist radio station, that like a web radio thing, and it had a chat room. And I'd never heard of this thing before, but suddenly I found myself in the chat room for this radio station. And there were two other people in it, and that was it. And I was just like, wow, when do you stumble across like a truly intimate space like that on the internet, where, you know, you can still have a degree of anonymity, but it's not for the sake of being able to say whatever you want. It's just like kind of an adventure. That feels like Twitch is kind of the closest to that, of like a big kind of commonly used platform that I can think of now.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like some of that public access feeling of Twitch really gets at what I liked about the old internet. My friends Jack and Kate have a daily morning show called Jack AM that I watch every day. That it's like one of the only things that feels like it gives me routine right now, which I also think people are really thirsty for, just to be able to wake up and check a site or watch a show or listen to a podcast weekly. Makes people feel like there's some sort of grounding in time.
One of the things, Samer, that you said that you've also found comfort in is the international celebrity chihuahua scene.
Yeah.
How did you find these fancy dogs?
I think like originally it was, there's just like one of those random tweets where there's a video and it's completely unsourced and somebody's using it for a completely different thing. Like it was these two chihuahuas standing up on the side of a car window, and one of them kind of dramatically like slumps down in a way. Like it wasn't like passing out or anything. It's just like it lost its balance. And my girlfriend Heather, I think, tracked down like who owned that chihuahua like on Instagram, because it wasn't like a relatively obscure account, but it just wasn't like known very well. And it's their names are Chororo and Maguro, and I believe Maguro means tuna in Japanese.
And I think Maguro is like I'm gonna look it up. It's a different kind of fish. It is a fish.
Oh, it's a fish. Okay, I might have gotten that wrong. But the Instagram is like Kayoshihara, which I'm not sure where that originated. That just might be the person's name. But the two chihuahuas, one of them is like pretty normal and like it's has like white fur, and the other one has like a mysterious thing where it walks kind of funny, but then like if you point it out in the comments, the owner gets really offended and mad and just like doesn't want to talk about it. And I think one person asked, is like, is she okay? Like, why is she walking like that? And the translation was like, Maguro lives hard every day, and didn't really elaborate beyond that. It is a struggle for her.
Which one is which? Because I'm looking at the account right now, and one of them is genuinely kind of is starting to have the amphibious head effect, like has kind of eyes on either side of its head because its head is so small, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but Maguro is the one that like...
the what?
The fawn colored one.
Yes, that's Maguro. Okay, yeah. Maguro does look like she lives hard.
I mean, a lot of these chihuahuas, I scrolled kind of back in the archives of some of them. We looked at a lot of chihuahuas. And when they're puppies, chihuahuas are very cute and like very, you know, a lot of these chihuahuas seem willing to pose with green apples in tiny hats, that kind of thing, with bubbles. But then it's hard because like many small dogs, chihuahuas, like they start to show their age when they're like 13, 14, they get like the eye thing and like maybe tooth problems. And it's hard because it's like this sped up thing of being a celebrity where it's like you don't want to read mean comments on like the once beautiful whatever, Popo and Pom. And it's like, now they're living those hard lives.
There's definitely one account. It's called like Nagiko or something, like it's similar to that. There's like a few numbers after the word, but they definitely pose a bunch of them as strollers, but also it's very clear that they use the same Instagram filters that like Calista Gingrich uses for like her and Newt. And it's just like very smooth faces for all the chihuahuas.
That's so weird.
Sweeten that chihuahua, please. Well, should we take a night email from one of our listeners?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is great. So this comes to us from our listener, Aaron, who writes, it's 1147 p.m. in, I think it's, is it Ocoee or Oso? I don't know. In Florida. Yeah, Ocoee, Florida. And as a new listener to your podcast, I've been listening to older episodes. In one episode, you all discussed the computer-generated content on YouTube that uses popular children's characters and search terms to create bizarre content meant to trick the algorithm into autoplaying those videos. This reminded me of something that I found in college. A large part of my final semester involved me editing a student film, and I spent many late nights in the editing lab working on my cut, along with two other editors working on their films. Often as the nights dragged on, we would end up getting distracted by looking up dumb stuff on YouTube. And this resorted to us typing in numbers and letters and a file type in the YouTube search bar, e.g. 3947.mp4, and seeing what came up. A lot of the content we found were things like accidentally uploaded vacation videos or picture tours of homes for sale. However, one night we stumbled across something that felt much more sinister. The link we opened started playing bizarre beeps and tones, and random shapes and lines in various colors started sliding across the screen. It felt like something dark and forbidden, like we had entered an episode of Black Mirror and we're going to be brainwashed or killed off one by one. The best explanation we can make of it was that it was some kind of AI trying to figure out how to make a human figure out of geometric shapes. If you scroll through their page from oldest to newest videos, you can see the algorithm seem to figure out how to make a basic face and maybe even add a basic body shape. So you can find this on YouTube. I think there's like maybe like 20 something views on a lot of these videos. Like nobody's looking at these, but the...
Was that it?
That was it.
I was playing. I clicked on it.
I was like, is that in my mind from talking about this? Scary.
Yeah, it's really scary. The name of the account is Sweet Peach. Sweet Peach has 194 subscribers somehow on YouTube, but like 20 views per video. So I don't know who's checking on Sweet Peach. The name Sweet Peach is really scary in the context of how abstract this is. I would love to know what, I mean, all the file names are just like a series of letters and numbers. I wonder what they put into the search to find this account. But this is some real good weirdo late night,
oh yeah,
like internet trawling material. And it does feel like The Ring or something, like, oh, if I watch this, am I gonna have an aneurysm or something? Like, it's very weird.
It's super scary. And I don't know, are you guys familiar with WebDriver Torso?
No.
That's so familiar. Jog my memory.
It's from, so the only reason I was not familiar with WebDriver Torso until I searched Sweet Peach and then found a Reddit post that said, this reminds me of WebDriver Torso. And WebDriver Torso has a Wikipedia page and stuff. So I guess in 2014, people discovered this YouTube channel called WebDriver Torso, and they were like, it was very similar to this. It was, you know, like these kind of like shapes, like mostly squares. And it kind of just, it was like nothing, but it was a lot like this, but not as intricate. Like this has drawings of faces. This was just like square, red and blue. And people who noticed it, like started talking about it, and they became convinced that it was like, you know, all of these conspiracy theories started popping up of like aliens trying to get in touch with us. It's spy videos. And I guess three of the videos were strange. They were not like the others. One of them was, the title was basically a shortened form of Temporary Rick Rule 1985, where one of the squares becomes Rick Astley dancing. One of them is only available in France and you have to pay to watch it. And it's it's a Spanish dubbed episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And you have to like pay to watch it. But no one could figure out what it was. And then finally, YouTube admitted that it was like an internal kind of training thing. So it was, you know, they were trying to see if we make this simple video and then upload it, like what's the differentiation in quality from what we recorded to what we see. But if you Google WebDriver Torso, then the Google logo becomes WebDriver Torso themed.
Whoa.
Scary.
I want to try.
Yeah, try it.
It's always weird when you see the backstage of the internet.
Yeah.
That's very unsettling. This also...
Oh my God, it happened.
Oh, scary. But it's like, this doesn't seem like an internal YouTube thing, but you wonder if maybe it's like trying to train, it's like training itself to be better at uploading videos. But it's the name Sweet Peach is just, it's weird because it doesn't fit.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's something like before knowing that this is an internal YouTube thing with WebDriver Torso, it just feels like, you know, an art project or something, because it's very, you know, it looks like a Mondrian or something.
Yeah. And like WebDriver Torso is such a like net art sound and name.
Yeah, it feels like a project. It feels like somebody, you know, doing some art, trying to be creative or whatever. The thing about the Sweet Peach thing is something about the faces and the things that almost look like faces make it feel much more like the machine is becoming self-aware and like it's in its embryonic stage and we must stop it.
Lawnmower Peach.
It's very Lawnmower Man.
Have you ever found anything like truly weird and unexplainable like that? Or do you have a favorite one of those, Sammer? Like just weird little pockets in the internet?
I haven't personally, but I was looking at that Sweet Peach channel after you sent it and I was just curious, like, because it seems like it's using like the same kind of foundational elements, like to the point where maybe something like somebody made a bot or something. I was like, all right, let's see how many videos this can create out of these certain elements. But it seems like all of the videos were uploaded in October, but not all on the same day. So,
I'm looking at one that was uploaded in April. So I'm gonna look.
Scroll back far enough.
Yeah,
this is not this. Were they uploaded this year? I didn't look.
It was last year. Yeah, a lot of them were uploaded in October, and then there are, there's like the large bulk of them. It looks like were uploaded in October. I was looking at one from April for some, so maybe that was like the first one.
Yeah, I love something like this where it's impossible to tell if it's just like an actual industrial back channel or if it's like someone trying to make a creepypasta.
It definitely seems automated. Like the bulk of this is like beyond somebody trying to like somebody just like planting some scary stuff. Like it does feel like there's some kind of automation or bot behind this because there's just such a volume of stuff. And oh my God, it's creepy. It's really creepy.
Those tones are very creepy. I mean, anything
it reminds with me
the
of
tones.
Lavender Town in Pokemon, like the level that's supposed to make you want to kill yourself.
Can I tell you another conspiracy I just heard about, actually, that's very similar to what you're talking about, which is like the idea of tones that will make you do something?
Yeah, and there's that feels like a very kind of, you know, it's like this sort of the horror movie version of what everybody kind of was afraid of with the internet when it first started to become a thing, which is like, oh, you're going to accidentally stumble into something that's truly dangerous or that's either going to steal all your money or, you know, open you up to, you know, some kind of physical attack or whatever. So there is like, I feel like we all have this sort of basic fear about the internet, you know, no matter how many iterations of it we have lived through, where there's still this thing of like, I could find the haunted website.
Yeah. And also as you like see people go off the deep end because of stuff they learned about on the internet and conspiracy stuff, which I feel like has been happening more and more. So my friend Carter Cruz was talking about this phenomenon of like, she just, you know, just like you follow somebody and then they suddenly just take a turn into conspiracy town.
Yes.
And she was saying like, I had been noticing this too, just of like some random like hot girls I follow that are like musicians or models or whatever. And then they'll just start posting about like Q stuff. And she was saying, she was like, oh, did you encounter this? She followed somebody who then started posting about a conspiracy that involved people putting tones in music that are going to like make you do stuff, brainwash you and make you do stuff.
What kind of music? Is it like current music?
Yeah, I think the idea was like probably electronic music or pop music that, you know, they're brainwashing you by putting certain tones that make you feel certain ways in music, which is also the kind of the plot line of the Josie and the Pussycats movie.
Right.
But also it came up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills on the other context that there's like a calming tone. We talked about this before, I think. But I hadn't thought about its corollary of there being like the evil tones in music.
The one that kickstarts the disintegration of your brain.
Yeah. And she was like, I don't know if I'm like, I think I'm going to unfollow this person because it's too weird. But I was like, I've just been noticing that more and more, that people will just take a turn into some conspiracy and just never come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's also a very fine line between people who are kind of like hippy dippy, happy, good hippies who then become kind of anti-vax and then become QAnon.
Yes, there's so much crossbreeding right now between new age anti-vax stuff and QAnon, because yes, it's sort of the center of the Venn diagram is like, hey, we love children, right? You care about children. Come on in. But it's scary to me. It's very scary. How do you bring people back from that?
I mean, it's this whole, yeah, it's the conspiracy thing in general, just like getting off of the addiction of finding connections between things like we've been talking about, I feel like, the last few weeks. It's like once you kind of start that line of thinking, it's really hard to break out of it and be like, no, there are things that are just random. Like there are things that are just the way things are. Like, but if there's a unified field theory about everything, or one large, you know, conspiracy, then there's something actually kind of comforting about that in some way.
Right.
The
Chihuahuas are spelling out messages.
they're trying to tell us something.
With their crusty eyes, they're trying to tell us.
Before we let you go, Sammer, we wanted to briefly discuss. So Emily is now, she's shuttling back and forth between a couple of different places, but she is spending some time in a house that is haunted.
I mean, I live there. Yeah.
You live. Yeah. But now you're not there.
I have to go to, because the ghosts have taken over the internet. I have to go elsewhere for internet. So.
Also, yeah. You said that you were chasing mice. Are there mice and ghosts in that house?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. I am not alone. no matter what the context is. Yeah.
But Sammer, we asked you if you had, because you're from New Hampshire, and we were like, is it very haunted? Because New England as a whole is haunted. But we kind of agreed New Hampshire is not like the most haunted place in New England. I think it's Connecticut. Maybe
I think it's like a two-way race between Massachusetts and Connecticut, because Massachusetts kind of, I mean, I had the Salem witch trials, obviously, and that gives you a pretty big lead in terms of haunted occurrences in the mm-hmm. state. But yeah, Connecticut is, I don't want to say sneaky haunted, but it's...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Rhode Island is the most haunted New England state.
Because of the vampire thing?
Because of H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe.
That too.
But
that's a good point.
They lean into being haunted themed. But I think Connecticut is the scariest.
There you go.
But in a different way. Just
in
like
a Stepford Wives
yeah.
way. Which is different than ghosts. Automatons. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really spent that much time in New England proper. I think like in general, I mean, I get like a lot of, you know, the earliest settled places, or like, you know, the earliest colonized places in the United States as being kind of haunted and cursed in a lot of ways. But I haven't really spent that much time in them. The one thing I will say, though, and I feel like this has come up before on this podcast, because I lived in New York for like 5 years. That's the bulk of my experience on the East Coast. But I think that New York City is actually like one of the least haunted places in the country.
There's no room for ghosts.
There's no room for ghosts.
Yeah.
There's too much like overlap, like too much overlapping energy. I think that they get crowded out.
Like to cite a little text called the Ghostbusters here to counter your argument. The ghosts live.
That's a fantasy.
They live in the subway tunnels and in the libraries.
They don't. They honestly, I think they don't like people. Like the New Yorker ghosts are not fans of crowds. That's how it feels like they've been chased out.
They're not fans of tourists.
Well, who is?
I wonder if the New York ghosts are just like talking among themselves when one of the ghosts moves out to like Connecticut or Massachusetts. They're like, ah, another one's leaving.
New York is
couldn't
dead.
Handle it. New York yeah. is New York is undead.
Yes. You pointed us to a New Hampshire magazine article. What is it?
Yeah,
I think magazine. So. And they, there were a few different examples of like hauntings in New Hampshire. The Hotel Portsmouth is this old mansion that was turned into an inn, and that one sounds pretty haunted. Cause and the ghosts, I guess, like to play with ice from the ice machine.
Yeah, that one stood out to me because it was just so specific. Like the ghosts really like messing with the ice and just like putting it in piles.
Ooh,
I feel
that's
like
an interesting ghost activity.
All bed and breakfasts are haunted, but usually by like the proprietor of the bed and breakfast.
Is that a fact?
I just find people's old dusty things to be haunted. Like obviously, California is also very haunted,
extremely.
But there's less of like the, you know, a blanket from 1850. To connect you to the time when the haunting is.
It's true.
The Airbnb thing is also, like, we've talked about Airbnbs being haunted or not. And, you know, there's such a wide swath of levels of hauntings. And we've talked about, like, okay, so you could be in, like, an old historical house in New England and rent that as, like, your picturesque getaway or something. But is that more or less, like, you know, if you're living in somebody's home or somebody's, like, vacation home or something, is that more or less haunted than being in a place that's, like, a new build apartment that's, like, just there to be an Airbnb and just is kind of soulless and empty? Like, I am more spooked out by the latter than the former. I would rather have some, it's kind of like the probiotics of the spirit world. Like, I want some fauna, some flora in the mix. Like, I can't have a completely blank slate. That feels unhealthy.
And that backs up why New York is not haunted, is like the humans are the probiotics.
Yes.
I think that's a great analogy.
I think we're developing a universal theory, which is just that like landlords are all ghouls. That's who's haunting these properties. But also New Hampshire, famous for the live free or die motto, it does have a sort of reputation as a sanctuary for people such as Vito on The Sopranos and more recently Ghislaine Maxwell. So I think Ghislaine's house in New Hampshire might be the most haunted place in New England now.
Oh yeah, I would not spend the night there.
Yeah, any place, like, I think that's maybe one of the only places that's haunted in New York City too, is any place that Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell has lived. Like, that's haunted.
You guys
AF.
Think there aren't other creepy apartments in New York though? Come on. There's a whole network. Stanley Kubrick tried to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many. I find, as I've said, I find any rich person apartment in New York to be totally haunted.
I think that if you're going to say that there are haunted New York apartments that are not related to Epstein, I'm going to say that they're the lofts. Because lofts, ghosts love lofts, I think. Because as you know, ghosts haunt a property like the land. They don't haunt the building. But I think that they would be. And then the path that the ghosts take supposedly doesn't have to do with the layout of the place as it now is, but as it once was. So in a loft, you take away all the walls, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that makes ghosts mad. I think I feel a bad vibe in lofts.
Do ghosts also hate open floor plans and offices, I'm assuming?
Yes,
for sure. Yeah. Especially now that we're all quarantined, we all should hate those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, but if they hate them, they stay away from them, or are they there but angry?
They're angry.
They're
vengeful. I think they're always here. A haunting really is not, maybe I'm redefining everything now.
It's not optional. They have to haunt it, but it's like, ugh, if I have to haunt an open floor plan office, then like
then
my
I'll
life
be mad.
Sucks.
Well, what if it's like ghosts are all around us, but the haunting means a ghost that's pissed. It doesn't, like, there could be ghosts in my house, but I wouldn't consider it haunted because they don't do anything to me.
Or they're just regretful. I just saw the movie Ghost, which all takes place in like an insane New York loft, and a ghost haunts a loft in that. But also, yeah, maybe the ghosts are just mad about gentrification.
I was going to say, I guess I'm interested in the idea that you would treat a ghost the way you would treat like a spider, and that it ultimately serves a good, and only if it's mad will like you hear from it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Only if it's been disturbed. Well, Samer, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for talking about ghosts and chihuahuas with us. Where can people find you, and where can people find and engage with Defector as well?
So Defector, if they wanted to subscribe, they'll go to defector.com. We're also on Twitter at Defector Media, and I'm just at twitter.com/Samer.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and everybody go check out Defector, which will hopefully be live when you're hearing this, if not very, very soon. So check it out.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Samer.
And thank you so much for listening to Night Call. You can follow us on Instagram at Night Call Podcast, Facebook at Night Call Podcast, and Twitter at Night Call Pod. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Also, leave us a rating and review. It really helps us. It helps get the show out there. And you can also support us on Patreon. We're on patreon.com/nightcall. We've got bonus episodes, a monthly newsletter, mixtapes, all sorts of fun stuff. So check us out there if you want more Night Call in your life. Take care, y'all. We'll be back next week. See you later.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.